Welcome to Beyond Rent, the property management podcast brought to you by Rent Manager. Each episode, we sit down with an expert to talk industry updates, tech solutions, and top tips for those in the property management space. And now, let's get to the conversation and go Beyond Rent.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Beyond Rent. Bitcoin is not a new concept, but for many of us, it isn't something that we're really actively engaged in quite yet. But like any financial or technology tool, it's bound to have an impact on our industry. So we have Matt with BitReserve with us today to help us understand how Bitcoin and the real estate market fit. So we're really excited about this conversation, and Matt, welcome to Beyond Rent.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this will be fun. I'm probably one of those people that wants to learn more about Bitcoin. It's not something I'm actively involved in. We talked about that before hitting the record button. So I want to learn more, especially how it fits in the real estate market. Before we jump into that, I want to learn more about you. So go ahead and introduce yourself and tell our audience who you are and what you're all about.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, my name's Matt. I'm with BitReserve. I have a pretty interesting background for the last 5 or 6 years, and I'll kind of jump into that. So currently work with my family. It's a company called Rudd Development, based out of Seattle, Washington. And what we do is real estate development, so multifamily, apartments, condos, townhomes, all that kind of stuff. My role there is project management, and then property manager as well. And I probably started that back in 2019, 2020. And before that, I had been just kind of Bitcoin focused since 2015. So I had spent time managing money for other customers and clients, self-managing money, and basically just trying to understand this whole new world of money and Bitcoin. And then I worked for a startup coming out of college, which was a blockchain startup. And my dad kept hounding me to come home and work for him and work for the company. And so, yeah, 2019, 2020, I came home and started working for him. My first job when I got home was actually out in the field as a superintendent. So I went from studying accounting in college to all of a sudden trying to figure out, plumbing stacks and framing punch lists and all the fun stuff about building construction. So did that for a couple of years, and that was a really good experience for myself. What took and that was in a little plat development in it's a place called Black Diamond. It's in just outside of Seattle. But once I wrapped that up, went back into the office, and that's when I started doing project management and built a lot of kind of small 6-8 unit projects in Seattle. And then things kind of took a turn, I'd say end of 2021, beginning of 2022. We stopped doing spec projects just because the construction costs were just going insane. And as a small family office, we just felt like it was a risky time to really dive in and take more projects on. I started a property management company and just started managing all of our units that we had built up over the last 10, 15 years. So from the field as a superintendent to managing projects to all of a sudden getting 200 units dropped in your lap to manage and all the fun, things that came along with that. So that's kind of a little bit about the history of myself the past few years. What else you got?
Yeah, no, that's great. I love hearing people's stories. And it really is amazing how often they start with family, right? That there's a family business or their family was involved in real estate or multifamily or some type of housing rental. So there's like that connection there. And the fact that you kind of went away and said, I'm going to go do my own thing. I'm going to figure things out. You kind of had this focus on Bitcoin. And then the family always kind of calls you back, right? Like, time to come back and help run the family business. And you're like, that's fine. I'm going to learn this side. But now let's infuse the Bitcoin side, the things that you were learning outside of the family business. How do you incorporate it into it?
Yeah. And so in 2022, I started managing all these units. And there was a problem that I kind of saw clearly was costs are rising quicker, and it's hard to actually save money in our reserve account to prepare for future costs. And so with my understanding of Bitcoin and my background in Bitcoin, I basically pitched to my dad. I said, look, we have all this money coming in from our cash flows. Let's just take a percentage of it, whether it be 5%, 10% at the property level, and let's just hold it in Bitcoin. And the idea, because our cash for our reserves was only, you know, making 1% to 2% in a money market account. But we knew that the cost of constructions was going much higher than 1% to 2%. And so in my head, it just, the math did not make sense. And so I think that's kind of where it all began for me, was how do we blend Bitcoin into our real estate so that in 3, 5, 7, 9 years down the line, when there's actually something big we have to do, like, you know, replace a roof, replace an HVAC system, you know, maybe there's cracks in the foundation, things that are a little more out of more than just a unit turn, where are we going to get that money from? And we didn't want to come to a situation where, hey, we have to pull equity out of the project or out of the apartment to, you know, replace the roof. And so that's when we started doing this back in 2022, was just take a little bit of cash flow, build it into Bitcoin. And in just 3 years time, you know, we feel a lot better about kind of where we're at. So, yeah, so that was a problem I saw, was that, okay, construction costs are growing much more than what I'm earning on, you know, the cash reserves. And I think this kind of led me down a path to just kind of uncover the bigger problem. And that was, you know, there's a number that which we all read every month, which is the CPI number, the consumer price index. And, you know, that trails at, you know, between 2 to 3% a year. And I think that's a number which, I mean, I personally can't get behind that number. And so I started to look at the M2 number. And the M2 number is basically the amount of new currency units, US dollars, that are coming into the system each year. And when I started to look at the growth of M2, the amount of money coming in the system, I realized, okay, construction costs are actually tracking with the M2 data, and which I call the true inflation rate. And so, that's kind of the problem that I was kind of witnessing, is how do you keep up with monetary debasement? That's kind of when I was like, oh, wait, I already have the answer to this. You just put a little bit of Bitcoin in there. And at least in our case, that has helped us a lot.
So there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
And I find all of this really interesting. CPI is a number a lot of people know, they reference. Anyone that's looking at, you know, maybe stock market or investments, or maybe looking at this number as well. Why are so many people focused in on that number if it isn't a good number to use, right? Why are we all focused on this if this M2 number is out there and we could be using this one instead?
Honestly, I think it's because when you go on, you know, CNBC or on the front page of Financial Times, Wall Street Journal, that's a number which is told to the public. Right. And I think it'd be different if it was the M2 number that they were talking about. But I think it's kind of this, you know, hidden scheme. I wouldn't say scheme, but it's a way to hide the reality, which is the monetary system grows or debases at a lot more than, you know, what meets the eye. But if you just go out there and parade a 2% CPI number or 3% CPI number, people are going to say, oh, it isn't that bad, whatever. And then, you know, they're off to their day. But if you started saying, oh yeah, the you know, our currency is debasing at 7 to 8% a year, I think that would probably stir up a lot of people and get a lot of people upset. Yeah. I mean, something that kind of blew my mind is that if you were to look at the performance of the S&P 500 dating back to the year 2000, it basically just mirrors that M2 number. And so really, when I realized that, I thought, okay, what people think as a risky investment, a really good investment for long-term growth and everything, that just mirrors the rate of debasement. So you're basically just treading water if you're holding the S&P 500. A lot of these little things have just kind of led to my thinking and understanding, but I don't know if I answered your question, but
yeah.
CPI number. Yeah. So I just think that it's a number that we've kind of been, just ingrained in our, and like that this is the number to go by. And I think that truth is starting to kind of unravel itself. I know the Bitcoin world is doing a lot to basically educate people on what is monetary debasement, what is true inflation. And I think it's just an education process which will unfold.
Yeah. As people pay attention, they're going to learn more and start understanding these pieces. And when I think about like this idea of the reserves that, yeah, you know, as far as you recognizing that as like the problem, at least that you saw within your own business, my guess, and maybe answer this for me, are most people's answer to that historically just put more money in your reserve, right? Oh, it's not growing fast enough because of the money market is only 1-2%. We know we're going to be behind, so let's just put more of our cash flow in there. Is that what most people are doing?
Yeah, I would say most people are doing that, or they're just kind of kicking the can down the road and say that this thing's going to figure itself out and my property value is going to continue to increase. And if there is a big event, you know, like a roof replacement, I can just pull equity out of my building and, you know, go that route, which I think is a, at least not a route I want to take. I want to be a little more prepared for that. But no, I think people aren't doing really anything to, prepare for this. And I think I was doing some research. It looks like the average reserve balance per unit in the U.S. of rental units is at about $1,500 per unit. And like I know from my costs, that can't even cover, you know, a unit paint, right? Mm-hmm. Like a unit turn paint. So I think a lot of people are just kind of blindly walking into what could be a tough future, which could lead to, you know, capital calls for selling or, you know, other scenarios where they're forced to, you know, figure out a way to get liquid, taking on new investors, right? Yeah.
Now that's really interesting. And I do agree. I think that is what's happening in the industry as a whole is either they're doing nothing, right? Or they're just trying to get ahead of it by putting more cash flow in, which really isn't the goal either, right? That really isn't the answer here. So understanding that problem is really important for me. I'm not operating one of these properties. I know about reserves. I understand how they work and kind of how maybe even some of the math is calculated, but understanding how that number needs to grow over time to make sure that it's prepared for when these things comes up is really important. So now that the problem's kind of framed, mm-hmm. Help me understand Bitcoin at a high level. Sure. I think we just kind of have to answer that question. Is like, what is Bitcoin? You've been doing this for a decade now, right? But there's a lot of people that would say, I don't really understand Bitcoin, and therefore I'm not really sure it's a safe investment.
Sure. You're going to have to cut me off because I could just keep going and going and going. So give me a hand signal or something. So Bitcoin at its core is just a peer-to-peer monetary network. So it allows two individuals, doesn't matter where they are, doesn't matter if they know each other or what, to interact on the network. So if I want to send money to Joe or Bitcoin to Joe, I can do so. There's a lot of reasons why it has a $2.5 trillion value like it does today. But I would say one of the most important things about Bitcoin is that it's, the most important thing is that it doesn't need an institution or an exchange or a bank to settle a transaction. So it doesn't rely on another entity to settle that transaction. So people have probably heard this term. It's fully decentralized, meaning that the entire network is governed by the participants involved, whether it's a miner or a node. And a very quick explanation of these two: a miner is think of just a computer like the one that you have up here. Imagine if that computer was connected to the Bitcoin network and you were using energy, right? That maybe you got from solar or hydro or, you know, in the ground, and you were using that energy to compute transactions which come onto the Bitcoin ledger. And in return, you're basically granted or gifted or given a new portion of Bitcoin. And so the main thing to understand about that is that you have these miners all over the world who are using scarce resources to protect the network and to process transactions and in return getting, a reward of new Bitcoin. So, I would say from a high level, it's a peer-to-peer monetary network. And the reason it has value today is because it's decentralized, but also because it has a lot of different monetary properties, which we don't see elsewhere. And so for the first one, it's scarcity. So there's a supplied cap of 21 million Bitcoin. If you were to compare that to just the US dollar, the US dollar doesn't have a cap on its supply. It's I think the cap of money in the world today is somewhere around 130 trillion. And the global increase of money is more about 10 to 12%. And so that $130 trillion can grow to 140, and that's compounding. And so I would say just a big difference there is that with Bitcoin, you have cap supply. With fiat currencies, you have no cap supply. if you compare it to a gold, gold has a lesser supply, but it's not a capped supply. And so gold increases at about a rate of 2 to 4% a year. But there's always new and more gold reserves in the ground. And so the supply is basically is what you can get your hands on. Yeah, so that's one piece. So you have scarcity, divisibility, which means that you can divide up a Bitcoin to 100 million units. Portability, so you can basically pick up your Bitcoin, you can take it anywhere in the world, which obviously gold you can't do, right? Good luck trying to get some gold bars across the border. And then there's some other ones that kind of also make it valuable too. But that's kind of a high level of what Bitcoin is.
Yeah, thanks for breaking that down. Again, a lot of people are still in this world of not touching Bitcoin, not engaging with it quite yet. Before we hit the record button, we even talked a little bit about like, are people investing their personal wealth in it as they kind of look at their how they diversify and things like that. And the reality is not very much, right? You kind of have people that are focused on Bitcoin and then you have everyone else, right? That's a little bit of a divide. So understanding how it works is really, really important. So let's kind of move into really talking about the connection into real estate, right? Where Bitcoin fits, why it's valuable in this space. And I'm sure we're going to kind of reference some of these other points that you just referenced as we go. So help me understand why Bitcoin and real estate need to interact.
Yeah. One more point just on what you just said, because it's true. A lot of individuals do not look at this asset class because they just don't understand it. There's been a very interesting trend in the past, I would say 24 months. Major institutions are getting involved with major dollars. Just a couple of examples. BlackRock, whether you like him or not, I'm not the biggest fan of them, but I think it's important to watch what they're doing in the world. They are buying Bitcoin at a just ridiculous rate. So they are averaging about $250 million of buy orders a day for their clients in their ETF. And just in about a 16 to 18 month period, they've amassed about 700,000 Bitcoin. And so you have a lot of other companies, institutions, and public funds who have started to take a large chunk of money to allocate to Bitcoin. And I think that's very important to see. And if big players in the world are taking this space serious enough to allocate billions and billions of dollars, I think we should be studying it and looking at it from a more micro level. And so kind of going into your question of like, why Bitcoin, why real estate? I think there's a couple of reasons. The first would be just the overall kind of macro situation with the US dollar and the debt problem and debt crisis, interest expense. And I think that, 2020 was a wild time. And the result of that wild time was about $10 trillion of new money coming into the system, which kind of just threw off a lot of basic supply and demand that we'd been used to. And so along with that, I think there's been a growing trend as of late that bonds, which were the safe haven of the world, aren't really too safe anymore. So where am I going with this? So if other countries and institutions are not storing their wealth or their value in bonds, that directly hurts interest rates. And so as a lot of your listeners probably know, bonds and interest rates are oppositely correlated, which means that when interest rates go up, the price of a bond goes down. And so just as an example, the last 12, 18 months, we've seen a lot of other countries starting to sell off their US bonds. And what that signals to me is that, okay, other countries are starting to move away from this reality that the US bond is the safe haven of the world. And so as they began selling off bonds, interest rates actually go up. So why is that important for real estate? Well, every basis point jump in real estate is a direct hit on your property value because of cap rates and everything. We know about that. And so I think there's just a number of risks inside the real estate world, which led me to believe that, wow, I think Bitcoin actually can make a positive change in the real estate world. So interest rate risk, I would say, alongside with like the US dollar problem, operating expenses are growing, increasing just by a lot. I was just in your lobby reading a little magazine you guys had, and it said, this was back, I think 2023, it said operating expenses in Orlando, Florida grew by 24% in the year 2023. That's insurance costs. That's property costs. That's utility costs. That's maintenance costs. That's your elevator guy's costs. That's all those costs are kind of are starting to go, you know, just up a lot higher. So you have interest rates, operating expenses. I think there's a climate aspect to this now where it's like my physical building, you know, could be harmed by whether it's Mother Nature or riots. I mean, I'm from Seattle. Shout out Seattle. And we saw a lot of riots in the streets and people's buildings got completely hammered and damaged. And so I think, oh, yeah, that's what four now, insurance rates going up. And so for those five reasons, I think Bitcoin can offer a very key purpose. Bitcoin is, like I kind of mentioned earlier, it's scarce and everything, but it can't be destructed. And so when you have a hard asset like a piece of property, which can be, you know, destructed or hurt, pairing it with a digital store of value that's a hard asset, I think makes perfect sense. And if you actually allocate to Bitcoin monthly via, you know, like a cash flow basis, reoccurring buy order, if you zoom out in 4, 5, 6, 7 years, you will have a digital stockpile that, let's say something comes up, you can, instead of having to, sorry, let me back up 1 second. So if a building needs liquidity or needs money to do something and there's no cash in their cash account, let's say it's a 100-unit building, it's pretty hard to sell one unit of that 100 units to generate $250,000 to replace the roof. But if you have a digital stockpile of Bitcoin that you've been accumulating for 4, 5, 6, 7 years, and that liquidity need comes up, well, you just sell off, you know, a little bit of Bitcoin, which is the most liquid asset 24/7. And so I think pairing the two makes sense. As you have increased costs, you're going to pair it with a digital currency, which has been growing at 30 to 40% a year. Now, it is volatile, but I believe the volatility is actually a perk, not a bug. And the reason I say this, people always get confused by that, but the reason I say that is because you don't want something that just goes up and to the right forever. If it has volatility, it has life, it has people chasing it. And with volatility gives opportunity to purchase at a lower price. And that's why I like the idea of dollar cost averaging into Bitcoin using real estate cash flows, because that's going to happen every month. So what, today's the price of Bitcoin is $120,000. Next month it could be 90, right? Next month it could be 150. And if you just forget about the noise of the price and just consistently create a strategy to dollar cost in, I think if you zoom out over a 5 to 7 year period, you're going to be in a much healthier position, you know, on your property balance sheet. So there's kind of the cost aspect, which I think is important for Bitcoin. And there's a couple other ones that I want to kind of just briefly touch on. Interest rates are continuing to go up. Who knows how that kind of shakes out? But I know that just because from our own properties, all these properties have a future refi event that they have to do. They have to refinance. They have to go source another form of debt. And I know a lot of the properties currently are on low interest rates that they probably tied up in 2019, 2020, 21. And some of those terms are 5, 7 years. So that means that in the next handful of years, probably by 2030, a lot of these properties in the US are going to have to refi at much higher rates. So if you were to allocate a large amount of your cash flow to Bitcoin now and prepare for those 5 years, when that refi event comes, you have an asset that you can pair your physical real estate with that's been growing at 30, 40% a year. So what I'm trying to say is that you can recapitalize your balance sheet a whole lot quicker when you pair a 30% CAGR currency with your physical building, which grows at, I don't know, between 1 and 4%, depending on the year. When I say CAGR, I mean compounding annual growth rate. Sorry.
No, that's good to break out terms like that so people can keep up, because there is a lot happening.
There's a lot
in all of these pieces. And kind of the big takeaway that I'm hearing over and over again is the fact that, you know, you are going to have those large expenses. You are going to have refi. You are going to have a roof, whatever it might be. And whatever you think you're putting in a reserve today, the value of those dollars are not going to be enough to cover the increase in the cost of that roof or possibly the cost of the refi as you go through and look at higher interest rates and things like that that are happening. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost inevitable, right? Instead of kicking the can down the road, like you said earlier, how do you get ahead of this? So again, maybe playing a little bit of the skeptic here. So mm-hmm. you said it's been 30 to 40% growth for Bitcoin year over year. At what point does that level off and plateau? At what point does that look just like the S&P, like you had mentioned earlier, instead of this 30 to 40% growth? Is there a shelf life of that type of growth?
That's a great question.
And maybe you can't predict the future, but I think some people might start asking that question.
Yeah, obviously as an asset gets bigger, it's going to stabilize, right? Because it's a $2 trillion asset. A couple of things. I think it'll truly stabilize when the government can stop printing money and we actually do bend the curve of the debt, which means that's probably not going to happen, right? If you actually do the math on you know, the US budget, the US debt crisis, interest expense, more and more dollars will need to enter circulation to kick the can down the road, to pay the expense, to pay all of our debts. And so my philosophy, as long as which is shared with a lot of other smart people in the space, is that Bitcoin's volatility actually might just continue to go up, because if there's more sheer dollars and fiat currency in the space, well, history tells us that money or value will always flow to the scarcest asset. And so, sure, its annual CAGR might drop off, but with Bitcoin, you have a supply which is fixed. You have, and let me kind of break one thing down. So there's 21 million Bitcoins. This is very important. 21 million Bitcoins. And there's something called a halving event, a halving schedule, which means that every 4 years, the number of newly issued Bitcoin into the world gets cut in half. And so let's take year 2009 to 2012 or 13. The block reward was 50 Bitcoin per block, and a block is every 10 minutes. After that 4 years, the block reward went down to 25 Bitcoin per block. After that 4 years, 12 and a half. After that 4 years, 6.25. So every 4 years, the new amount of Bitcoin actually being issued in the world gets cut in half. Currently, there's about 20 million Bitcoin in circulation. That number will complete at 21 million. And the year of that will be about 2140. So we are over 100 years remaining for the last million Bitcoin to be mined. And so I kind of lost my train of thought. But to go back to that, I do think its annual growth rate will kind of taper off a little bit. But I think it's still going to be pretty strong, given it's a supply or a scarce asset with limited supply. Especially as these kind of fiat or currency problems continue to erupt globally.
Now, and that was interesting. I did not know that's how that worked with Bitcoin, as far as that halving event and kind of the reduction over time and what's being awarded and how much longer it's going to take to fully, I guess, vest Bitcoin, yeah, if that's the right word for it there, and how that really is in stark contrast to how the US dollar works, right? And the fact that you mentioned that the value goes to the scarcest item out there, mm-hmm, right? So if we think back, even the reason why gold was valuable, my assumption is because it was scarce, right? It was a scarce resource, so therefore we assign value to it. We think oil is a scarce resource, mm-hmm, that we use, so there's value assigned to it, and the less there is, the higher the cost will be, right? In those things. So I mean, that makes sense to me, right? Yeah, there, as far as understanding how that will work. So and your estimation of what you know about the market, will it grow 30 or 40% a year? That's yet to be determined, but it should always outpace any other US or dollar-based investment just based on scarcity.
Yep. Yep. And I think now that we've kind of crossed this, chasm of having it just being this fringe, asset where a couple, people in their basement who are mining Bitcoin own, to now you have large companies, who are traded on, Wall Street, who have billions and billions of dollars of Bitcoin on their balance sheet because they want to store their value on with, the hardest asset known to mankind. Another interesting thing, Figma, which is a tech startup, mm-hmm, they're going public, I think, in the next few months. But, they have $100 million of Bitcoin on their balance sheet. So it's a bunch of, I think the kids are, or the founder is probably 25, 26. So it's a younger company, but there's this trend where a lot of these younger companies are starting to actually just put Bitcoin on the balance sheet, right? They understand it. They can get behind it. They've grown up just in the digital age and it makes sense to them. And they don't want to have to fight this battle of inflation and currency debasement. They're just going to put Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So when I saw Figma, you know, like actually have a decent amount of Bitcoin on the balance sheet, a company that's about to go public, I was like, wow, that might be the first equity I'll buy in a long time, right? Like, yeah. So, anyways.
Yeah, no, that is super interesting. And I think to your point, when you talk about, you know, just some people in their basement mining for Bitcoin, that really was kind of, I think, the stereotype of the story or the headlines that people heard. It was like, well, what is it? They're mining these Bitcoins. And then you'd hear about people making millions of dollars overnight and then losing it all the next day. And all of that, I think, caused confusion of what it is or what it isn't. So I think the conversation today has been really, really helpful. So I want to understand more at this point about how BitReserve works.
Sure.
When I talk to a lot of people in this space, especially when we're talking about like a supplier, a technology company, a lot of it, I can instantly start putting the pieces together because it's either an existing solution that they've kind of enhanced or they're bringing new technology into a current system. And again, I can make the connection pretty quickly. So I want to make sure we talk really through how BitReserve works, how you're going to market with this product to solve these problems.
Yeah, please. So knowing what I know, I wanted to build a way to allow, and this is really for the property owners, right? That's kind of my target market is the property owners. Now, the property management companies are kind of the vessel or the messenger about that. But this is really for the owners and them preparing and fortifying their balance sheets. So I wanted to create a way where property owners could allocate to Bitcoin on a monthly basis without even having to, you know, pick up their hand or do anything, right? So from a high level, it's a tool which allows property owners to buy Bitcoin monthly using their cash flows. And so the friction points that I saw was, okay, well, I am not going to be successful if I have to teach every property management company how to do so, right? Here's how you do the accounting for it. Here's how you do journal entries. Here's what it is. Here's a wallet. I said, nope, I need to figure out a way to remove all that. And so what we designed is basically an instructions-based software. And there's an onboarding process. Let me walk you kind of through what an onboarding process would be. Let's say you own a 10-unit apartment complex and you say, you know what? It's a good idea. I want to buy $1,000 of Bitcoin and just kind of build up this Bitcoin nest. You would come to me. You would integrate through your rent manager plugin. You would directly be spit out to our onboarding process. We'd be able to see your properties. And so you'd basically go to a point where you could create your own dollar cost averaging rule, right? So let's say Joe says, you know what? I want to just flat buy $1,000 a month. That's the rule you'd create. So $1,000 flat buy order. And I want that to happen on the 5th of every month. So you'd give us your transaction date. During that onboarding process, we would walk you through how to add specific general ledger codes, GL codes, to your existing chart of accounts. One which would be a Bitcoin asset account, which would be a long-term asset, and then one which would be Bitcoin fees, because there's always transaction fees with Bitcoin. And so I would basically guide you how to add those to your chart of accounts. And then you'd come back and say, yep, I've completed that, great. And then why we do that part is because we are going to post journal entries on the properties, on the ledger's behalf. Like I said, I don't want the management company having to do the accounting, the buys, the sells, any of that kind of stuff. I want this to be an automated process. So you give me your rules that you're comfortable with buying Bitcoin with, and then we're just going to post a journal entry to your ledger. And what that does is says, hey, okay, we're going to credit your cash account, $1,000. We're going to debit your Bitcoin account, $1,000. We use a partner on the back end by the name of Strike. And so Strike is a Bitcoin-only exchange who I think is the best Bitcoin exchange in the world. And they have these really cool API capabilities, which allow you to basically API call for buy sells. And so the way it goes is we post a journal entry to your property ledger on a specific day of the month. And then we go call Strike through an API call and say, hey, this property, Joe's property, wants to buy $1,000 of Bitcoin. Can you go pull $1,000 of Bitcoin from their account? So, you know, 1 to 2 days transaction, you know, like business days, that $1,000 gets pulled from your property trust account and automatically gets converted into Bitcoin and is held in a Bitcoin wallet or, you know, yeah, account that's directly tied to your property account. And so in the onboarding process, we're also going to basically create you a Strike account because we do need somewhere for the money to go, the Bitcoin to go. And so we'd walk you through how to create a Strike account. It's super easy. And then once that Strike account goes live, the full integration's live. And so really from a high level, it's choose your rules, choose when you want the money to move, create an account with Strike. And then from there, you're good to go. You have a dashboard, so you can come on the dashboard and you can see your performance, you can see your settings, your rules. Maybe you want to say, you know what, I just want to buy Bitcoin if my property is performing well. Okay, so great. You can create a rule that says, if my cash flow is over $10,000 a month or $5,000 a month, automatically buy X amount of dollars, right? I understand because I manage properties and I go through the owner reports and I've the P&Ls. I understand that the first most important thing is to have the property perform, right? And this is a tool for if your property is performing and you've, you know, been responsible in managing your property, then use some cash flow and safe keep some money for a wet day, a rainy day. And then like another rule, which you could do would be a vacancy loss rule. So if my vacancy is under 5%, you can buy X amount. But if my vacancy is over 10%, that means the building is not performing. Let's just skip the Bitcoin buy on that month. And then on all these rules, you can create skip months. So I know that taxes are paid twice a year. What's that? I think it's April and October. And so like, okay, you would be able to skip those months because you know that there's going to be a cash heavy month. And so really what we're doing is designing a system to allow Bitcoin allocation without any touch points because the owners want the property managers to focus on managing the buildings. They don't want the property managers managing wallets, Bitcoin buys, Bitcoin transactions. They want them focusing on the properties at hand and just let the Bitcoin buys kind of to us. So that's high level.
Yeah, no, that's great. And we talked a little bit earlier about how the fact that a lot of property managers are trying to get a little more involved in offering different services to help people manage their assets better. Knowing your history in the industry itself and how you have learned about Bitcoin as you've gone, it's so great to hear how you've solved the problems, right? Because it would be easy to say, hey, yeah, as an owner, you should be doing this 5, 10, 15, 20% of your cash flow, put in Bitcoin. But you had to really solve kind of the workflow for it. Like, how does it really fit into the business? And help me understand, because I think the accounting piece is the part that a lot of people would struggle a little bit. So they understand, okay, you take $1,000 and go buy Bitcoin. But what gets represented on the balance sheet for that Bitcoin? I'm assuming you're converting into actual US dollar value at that point to represent so it all makes sense, right?
Yep, exactly. So yeah, so when we post that journal entry, that's $1,000 buy. You can imagine $1,000 is leaving your trust account. And then let's say 975 of that 1,000 is for Bitcoin. And then there's $15 for transaction fees, okay? So that 975 is going to represent, it's going to be, you know, in your Bitcoin GL code on your ledger. And that's basically what it is. And if you're buying $1,000 a month, it's 970 plus 975 or 975 plus 975. Depending on the jurisdiction you're in and, you know, who your CPA is and what they tell you, and I guess what type of corporation you are, some accountants or CPAs might have you mark up the Bitcoin or down to its fair market value at the end of the year. And that's something I think we'll provide guidance on when we get there and get launched is kind of some accounting and tax guidance. We're just kind of been focusing on getting the product in development. But yeah, so the accounting is actually very, very simple. And that's the only thing you'd have to do from a tax standpoint is just mark it up or mark it down at the end of the year. And if you have any transactions as of like, hey, I sold some Bitcoin, there was a gain, you could go to the dashboard, you can CSV download all your transactions, even the sell transactions and know how much gain you had, how much loss you had. So we try to make it very simple, but there will be some accounting or a CPA touch point, but that's kind of par for the course on all these properties.
Oh, that's perfect. And that's really what I was trying to understand is what happens when there is that volatility in the market and it goes, because the goal is to have it go up in value. Mm-hmm. What do you have to do then? Is that something that's happening real time and that every time you look at the report, like it's going to be a different dollar amount or you see all these adjustments? That's not the case at all.
Correct.
Unless you need to, but that's going to be more of an annual reflection instead of a monthly or daily or anything like that.
Yep. And I know the accounting rules are changing pretty rapidly. I know the FASB accounting rules just changed this back in 2024. It might change again. So I think there's still a little bit of kind of gray area on it. But as of now, I mean, Michael Saylor, who runs MicroStrategy, he's been very vocal about this. He's, for reference, an equity that owns about 600,000 Bitcoin. And their whole business model is just going out, securing debt and buying Bitcoin. People call it crazy, I know, but that's what he does. But he talks pretty in depth about this. And so what I think he does, he marks up his Bitcoin to fair market value at the end of the year. And that's it.
Yep. No, yep. That makes a lot of sense. No, that's great. And what are you seeing with the people that you're talking to? Are they looking to move all of their reserves into Bitcoin or are people taking more of a percentage based approach to it?
Good question. I would say, what I advise is, you know, like a 60-40 or 80-20 split, right? Like liquidity needs are going to occur. And I would never suggest someone takes 100% of their reserves and go full Bitcoin, because then you are kind of at risk to that short-term volatility. Take 20%, right? Take 40%, allocate it to Bitcoin, and then just kind of park that aside and forget about it. Because I promise you in 5 years, that amount is going to surprise you. So I recommend that it's an 80-20 or a 60-40 or 70-30 split, where the larger number stays in cash. Because you do have liquidity needs that arise, right? Painting, all this kind of stuff, this little stuff. And then keep the Bitcoin balance for the big ones. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. Yeah. So let's kind of pivot and talk more about like action items here. Like people are listening to this. They want to learn more. Maybe they're even ready to start using a tool like this because they've been thinking about it for the last 10 years. Yeah. And maybe it's finally now that they want to start taking action. What do people need to know to start getting involved with Bitcoin and with BitReserve?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So anyone can go to bitreserve.ai. And when I started this kind of venture, or my co-founder and I started this, I said the first thing I need to do is educate, right? And so if you go on the website, there's an education tab at the very top, which talks about fiat currencies, talks about Bitcoin, talks about the advantages of Bitcoin and real estate. The accounting, like I probably have 8 articles in there, which really just clearly explain why I'm building this. And so if you still have questions or doubts or concerns, go to the website, spend some time reading. My email is at the bottom, or you can go to the contact page. And if you just have questions or just want to set up a time to chat where it's like, hey, I think I understand this, I don't, or maybe they want to challenge my thinking, great, call me. I would love to sit down and chat with people. I geek out on this stuff. So go to bitreserve.ai, learn more about the education, learn more about the product. You can reach out to us there. And then as far as next steps, go to your rent manager portal, go to the integrations tab, and you can just click on BitReserve integrate. And then you'll have emails coming your way on next steps of onboarding process and kind of how to go through there. We've done a very good job on making this very clear, simple. And again, we want to take all thinking out of this, right? People want allocation as asset class. They don't want to think about it. That's kind of what we're doing. It's just building a one-stop shop so they can have Bitcoin allocation with not having to worry about it. A couple of things to note. The first 100 owners who sign up get half off fees for life. And so we charge a 1.5% fee transaction, which people will learn. It's pretty standard on crypto Bitcoin for fees. So we charge a 1.5% fee on transactions. The first 100 owners will just be 75 basis points. And then one other thing I want to note is that I want to figure out a way to mutually align incentives from, BitReserve, but also the property management company and the owner. And so what we're doing is when a property management company or owner integrate with BitReserve.ai, BitReserve is actually going to have a fee revenue kickback to the property management company. So let's say we got $10 of fees. You will get a small percentage of that revenue that is sent to your Strike account. So you can actually start building your own Bitcoin balance and actually grow a little bit of a revenue stream as well. And I think one last point for property management companies. I think this is actually a very important part. Owners are fortunate because they have assets. Property management companies don't have assets. They just have operations, which, you know, they can sell and whatnot. But Bitcoin actually represents a very good opportunity for property management companies to actually start building up assets, right? And so if a property management company wanted to use $1,000 of their revenue each month to buy Bitcoin, they can do that through BitReserve as well. So not only can they actually allocate their own cash flow, they're going to get fee revenue from, you know, the transactions which flow through them. But I think Bitcoin can be a valuable asset to them, because how do you build up an asset base if you're a property management company? Well, you either just grow and scale, you know, and bring in thousands and thousands of units and stress yourself out to build the business, or you can just actually allocate to an asset which is growing. I know for the, when I started the property management company, I right away was saying, okay, how much are we bringing in? Okay, well, half of that is just going to be stored in Bitcoin. And, you know, 3 years later, I'm sitting, okay, great, happy times. And so I just think that if people slow down their time preference, really zoom out and stop thinking month to month, but thinking, you know, year to year, decade to decade, this asset is just an absolute no-brainer. Yeah.
And I really appreciate what you said about this whole idea of building up assets at the property management company level, especially for those like we talked about that are third-party based, because you're right. It's the volume of their business that gives them value. It's their ability to manage hundreds or thousands of units and build up these operations. And the reality is if you lose those units, the value of your company erodes with it, right? It's all based on that. And there's a lot of talk about what these companies are worth and what they sell for when they're ready to make an exit. So if you're building up an asset alongside that, no matter what happens in the volatility of the number of units you manage or how the market values your company, you always have that piece there. So that's kind of an exciting way to look at it as well. So it seems like you've thought of a lot of different angles to make sure you can benefit the industry.
Totally. And we have more stuff, more features, products coming down the line. This is just kind of the first kind of wedge for cash flow. So no, it's exciting. We just hope that the market kind of is excited about it as we are, because we think it's a huge opportunity and a huge addressable market to kind of do so with, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's great stuff. So you mentioned a few things in there. We'll drop some show notes as well to make sure people have the website, contact information, things like that, to make sure they can contact after listening to this. But like you said, going to the website is probably the best place. Obviously, finding you inside Rent Manager is equally as good, as because that's where you can actually activate the integration, right?
That's better.
And just get started right away and jump right into that onboarding. So that's really exciting. Well, Matt, this has been a great conversation. I've learned a lot about Bitcoin, about really what you're doing to serve the industry. And I'm really excited about the future of BitReserve.
Yeah, I would just encourage people to reach out with any questions. I'm happy to debate them or chat with them or just kind of, talk about it. Seriously.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again for your time. And to our audience, thanks for watching another great episode. And until next time, keep going Beyond Rent.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Beyond Rent. If you enjoyed this podcast, spread the word on social media and with your peers in the industry. To be notified when more episodes are released, subscribe using your favorite podcast player. Beyond Rent is brought to you by Rent Manager Property Management Software. Learn more about Rent Manager's industry-leading software solutions at rentmanager.com. Until next time, keep going Beyond Rent.